on Chaf Hei Yamed Aleph, discussing Tumah and Tahara, the Klicheres, and other Kalim. We already quoted a Brisa, which said that the Klicheres receives its Tumah from airspace, whereas other Kalim, non-earthenware, receive it from contact internally or externally. It can happen either way. And by the way, Yaakov, you've been bothered by the Kal V'chomer that we use here. So if you want to take a look, you should see Tosfos Uma Kol HaKelim, where he discusses the possibility that these aren't Kal V'chomer at all. Maybe a Mematzino. He refers you back to an earlier comment of his also in the sugya. So Omar Le Rav Ada Bar Ava Le Rava, top line there on Chavei. Rav Ada Bar Ava says to Rava, "Let me launch another one. Another one of those Kal V'chomer attempts." He says, "V'yehei klicheres mitame migabel mikal v'chomer." He says logically, the klicheres should be subject to tumah. This pottery should be subject to tumah from the outside, meaning from contact, is really the consideration. Mikal v'chomer. Let's make a logical argument. Other types of kelim do not receive tumah based on their airspace inside. Some sheretz is in the airspace, now the kli is tameh. That doesn't happen by other kelim, and yet they become tameh via contact on the outside. The klicheres can become tameh from its airspace. Certainly it can become tameh from contact with the outside. Again, working with the assumption that we can define kal and chamor here, that we can say, well, this is more likely than that, and since this is so, then that is so. Omar Kra, so he gives you a pasuk to defeat the idea. The pasuk says, "V'chol kli pasuach asher einit samid pasil alav," which literally means any open kli that doesn't have samid pasil. Samid pasil means a cover which is tight to it. That's the that's samid, like samud, to be close with something. And pasil, Rashi here translates pasil as migufo, from its body. However, Rashi on the Chumash translates pasil as chibur, from nachtule elokim niftalti, which we take as a term for wrestling and for fighting closely or pulling closely on something. So the idea is that it's a very tight cover. So you have an open kli that doesn't have a tight cover on it. And it's in an Oel HaMeis. It's in a room in which somebody passed, there's a corpse. So we said that the kli is tamei. So we say here, this kli pasuach. Hang on. That's what I want to get to. This kli pasuach, this open kli that we're talking about, is uniquely a kli cheres. If you take a look at Rashi, he says on kli pasuach, midekapid apsicha shmamina b'kli cheres koi. From the fact that we mention specifically an open kli, and not a kli that's closed, it must be talking kli cheres, because he continues to explain. De'ezu kli shatum aso kodemes lepischo. The word kodemes here doesn't mean to be before. Kodemes here means to go to. Like to be makdim lepischo means to get up and go to somebody's door. And what it means is, which kli has tumah enter through its entrance, through an opening? Be'eza kelim hergila taras atumah lahashkim ulamar v'lovo derech pischo. With which type of kli does the Torah say tumah has to, so to speak, enter early via its entrance, and it can't come through contact with the outside? That's the idea, but it does come through the inside. As the Gemara walks you through the question now, Ezu klisha tum aso kodemes lepischo, habe omer ze klicheres. That is the klicheres, because the klicheres is the one for which the Torah says el tocho. So therefore, this pasuk of v'chol kli pasuach asher ein samid pasil alav is talking specifically about kli cheres. V'chi ein samid pasil alav hu detameh, and it only becomes tameh in the Oel HaMeis if it doesn't have this kind of a tight cover. Hayesh samid pasil alav tahor, but if it had this kind of a tight cover on it, it would be tahor. So that tells me that it can't receive tumah from contact with the outside, because otherwise, what good is the tamid pasil on it if the mace touches the outside of it? Then it should receive its tumah anyway. So it's a little bit of a twisted approach here, but the idea is that that we've proved from the pasuk that a kli cheres will not receive tumah from contact with the outside. The Rav Yitzchak Tzvi Frank has a very interesting piece on this. Right, but he's saying even if it would be.
Tuma.
Even if it would, no, but even if it would be in contact,
right,
it would not receive it. Which is a chiddush, but that's what he's saying. Rav Yitzchak Tzvi Frank says a kli cheres only receives tuma from the inside because dirt is inherently worthless. It's only worthy and called a kli because it has a receptacle. So only via the inside, which is the receptacle, can it receive tuma. And he says that's why in Nisana Tokef we say a person is mashal kecheres hanishbar. He's compared to pottery that's been broken. The idea that it has no value because the receptacle is gone. That's the so God willing, this year when you say mashal kecheres hanishbar, you can think about chulin chavhei and kli cheres' ability to receive tuma, which I assume is what the Chazan always thinks about when he gets to that line. The okay. In any case, but yeah, there's a bright side to it because it's Charis Anishbar. You're right; he can't receive Tuma at least. At least he'll be at least he must have Charis Anishbar. He's Tahor. Good. That's the bright side for you. But the Gemara now argues the Kal v'Chomer in a different direction. We're going to try it in three directions. Usually we deal only with two, but here there's a third opportunity. The Yehu Kol HaKelim Mitamin Me'aviron Mikal v'Chomer. If I can't prove that a Kli Cheres will be like other Kelim to receive Tumah from external contact, let me at least prove that other Kelim can receive Tumah from their airspace. Mikal v'Chomer. Let's argue the Kal v'Chomer and say, Uma Kli Cheres Shein Mitamin Mi'gabo Mitamin Me'aviro. The Kli Cheres, the pottery, does not receive Tuma from contact with the outside, but it does from its airspace. So other types of Kalim, which can receive Tuma from contact with the outside, should also be able to receive Tuma from their airspace. No, because the Pasuk says, anything that falls into its inside. Tocho shel zeh, velo tocho shel acher. Only the toch, only the inside of a kli cheres, not the inside of other types of kalim. To which the Gemara says, that's very cute, but we already did a drasha from tocho. Vani tocho hadar shinhu. We use tocho at the bottom of chavdalad amid beis to teach that the inside communicates tuma, the airspace communicates tuma, even without physical contact with the walls. So the so you already used tocho. You can't use tocho twice. So he said, oh, that's okay. That doesn't bother me at all. Because we have, it's a big pasuk, and it has two uses. I brought it there on your sheet. The asher yipol mehem el tocho, kol asher bisocho yitmas. So we're going to play on the two words I bolded. Tocho and bisocho. And the way we do it is, Arba, the Gemara says, Arba tocho ksivi. We actually have four tochos recorded here, in the sense that the first one is tocho and toch. Because it could have just said toch. I mean, and it didn't even need that, Rashi says. I'm sorry. It didn't even need oh no, it's not Rashi, it's Tosis, V'chalik Zereshava. It could have just said bo. So the fact that you said toch, and then the fact that you expanded that to tocho, and then tocho and toch from the second one, from bisocho, which also could have just been bo. So therefore, I have four options, I have four available words. The chad legufe. So one of them is to teach me that a kli receives tuma from its airspace and communicates to anything in its airspace. That's the core halacha. Then v'chad l'gzera shava. One is the gzera shava where we link to the way it receives tuma with the way it gives tuma. The one linking where it receives and where it gives tuma to say that it's they're both of the same methods. That was the gzera shava that we had at the bottom of chavdal amid beis. V'chad tocho shel zev alo tocho shel acher. One is to teach me that it's only by kli cheres, not by other types of kalim, like we just wanted to say. V'chad tocho velo toch tocho v'afilu kli shatef matzil abachedzin. And one is to teach me a separate law, which is that if something is sitting inside another kli, inside of a kli cheres, even if that other kli is what we call a kli shetef. Kli shetef is a kli that you wash. The idea is a kli that can undergo hagala, as opposed to pottery, which can't. You can't kosher pottery via hagala by immersing it in boiling water. Other types of kalim, let's say metal, you can use hagala. That's called a kli shetef. So from the pasuk actually in this week's parsha, Yisha Tev Balayim, it will be, was it from there? See that or Shmini. But the point is that the other if something is inside of a kli, which is inside of a kli cheres, then tuma will not be communicated. Like a thermos, okay. Tuma will not be communicated in such a case. That's from tocho. Toho, not the inside of the inside. Harold, you had a question?
No.
Okay. Great.
It's also important that the keli is completely inside the other keli.
Correct. Well, that actually, right. That's Rashi's point about the Rishon and the Chitzon, the Chitzon and the right and the Pnim. Okay. Then they ask the third question. V'lo yehu kol hakelim mitamin migabon ela mitochan ubenegia. He says maybe I should argue a third way that other kelim should not receive tuma even via external contact. Maybe it should only be via internal contact. You already told me that other kelim can't receive through airspace, but maybe they only should be able to receive tuma via contact with the inside of the kli, not contact with the outside of the kli. Mikal v'chomer, logically. Uma kli cheres shemitame me'aviro enu mitame migabo. The pottery cannot receive tuma from its, can receive from its airspace, not from contact with the outside. Kol ha'kelim she'en mitame me'aviro, and these other kelim cannot receive tuma from their airspace. The einodin shein mitamin migabon. So they should also not be able to receive tuma from contact with the outside. They should be on the same playing field, at least with the klicheres. That's the argument. They should only receive tuma from physical contact with the inside, but not physical contact with the outside.
Avir and touching.
Correct. So Amar Kra, he says, no, the pasuk says, v'chol kli pasuach asher in samir pasil alav, tamei hu. The pasuk says, any open kli, which we took as the klicheres, that does not have samir pasil on it, will be tamei inside the ohel. The implication is, ha hu, then a klicheres, dechi ein samir pasil alav, tamei, that does not have such a cover, would be tamei. Hayesh samit pasil alav, meaning that if it had the right hayu dechiyent samit pasil alav tamei. This type of a kli, the kli cheres, is the one that if it doesn't have the samit pasil, is tamei. Hayesh samit pasil alav tar. But if it has the samit pasil, it's tar. In other words, kli cheres is the one that depends on samit pasil. Hakola kalim, as opposed to the other types of kalim, bein sheyesh samit pasil aleim, bein shein samit pasil aleim mitamin, they will become tamei with or without its samit pasil. So now, once you say that, hang on, let me finish the line. Yeah? The point is that if you're telling me that the kli cheres is dependent on samit pasil, the other type of kli is not dependent on samit pasil. Well, tell me, that means you're saying that the other type of a kli can receive tuma even with a samit pasil on it. If your requirement is that it only receives tuma when something touches the inside, has something getting inside, samit pasil is a tight seal. Yeah. It must be that it's receiving tuma from contact with the outside. That's the only way that it can work. Once you tell me that they receive tuma with a samit pasil on it, that's the only way it's going to happen. That's the argument that the Gemara gives. It's actually an argument you could present, but I'll leave it. Let's go right through the next Mishnah.
What does he assume that the only kli cheres has a receptacle or an opening that's used through his mouth and not a regular keli?
He's not. He's not assuming that. Well, but this is the only one whose opening matters. He's asking about kli pasuach. So the Gemara's approach was that kli pasuach doesn't mean open kli. Kli pasuach means, in this context, stop. Kli pasuach means, in this context, a kli for which tuma enters only via a pesach. A kli which depends on a pesach for tuma to enter. That's what he said, kodemes lepischo. That tuma will only enter that way. The other ones have the option of tuma migabon. That's why it means it. Right, so that's the problem with this whole kavachomer approach. Yes.
We have another possibility.
Right. And the problem is that each kavachomer assumes acceptance of other givens, which then get challenged in the next kavachomer. But that's the idea.
Rashi says a kli shatik.
Okay, we have so much to see here. This
Rashi
is a big daf.
It means tar b'mikvah. Rashi says
tar b'mikvah. Right. No, because I mentioned agala.
Yeah.
Right. No, you're right. It's tar b'mikvah. Thank you. Okay. Mishnah. It looks like we're a lot of the way done, but we're not. Mishnah says, another of these splits, where this is not like that, and that is not like this, which we started again, remember, with Shechita and Malika, we continued with Arefa and Shechita and so on. So now we're way off base. Tar Bechli Eitz, Tamei Bechli Matchus. Tar Bechli Matchus, Tamei Bechli Eitz. The rules for wood and metal kalim are opposite. And what we're talking about here is a golem. The golem here is not what your Rebbe called you in first grade, nor is it someone who stalked the ghettos of Prague. The golem here is the original term from which all of those were derived, and it means a raw material, something that is not finished, is not yet ready for use. And the usual explanation of a golem in the context of a kli is that it's actually a block of material which hasn't yet been hollowed out to make a receptacle. That's not quite the way we're going to use it today, but that's what golem actually is. So you have a golem that is a block, and then pshute kalim means flat kalim that are ready for use, like a tray. So those are going to matter, because what we're going to say here is that wood golem can become tameh, but a wood flat kli, like a tray without any border, is going to be tahor. A metal golem is going to be tahor, but a flat metal kli is going to be susceptible to tumah. So the laws are opposite. Wood golem becomes tameh, wood pashut is not. Metal golem is tahor, metal pashut is tameh. So they are the reverse of each other. We'll see it right now. Tana Rabbanan, Brisa says, golme kli eitz tameim. Right? If you have a golem of wood, it's able to receive tumah, pshutei and tahorin. But a tray, a flat kli, that is wood, is tahor. Golme kli matchus tahorin, a golem of metal is tahor, but pshutei and tumayin, but a flat one will be able to receive tumah. Nimza, tar b'kli eitz, tamay b'kli matchus, tar b'kli matchus, tamay b'kli eitz. So you see that which is tahor for metal is tamay for wood, that which is tahor for wood is tamay for metal. And that's the idea. The Elohein Golem Kliyot. So what exactly defines a golem? What exactly is a golem anyway? So he says, first we'll explain it regarding wood. The Elohein Golem Kliyot. This is what defines a wood kli as a golem. Kol sha'asid lashuf. If you are going to sand it, the lishabates, if you are going to make in it a receptacle such that it could hold something, Rashi refers you to the term mishbatzos, which we use in the begadim for the Mishkan, right? The asisa mishbatzos zahav, it's a base in which you're going to put a gem, or in which you're going to put something nice, or nails, Rashi has as a possibility. So that's lishabates, if it still needs that. Or ligarir, you're planning on planing it, planing the surface. Or likar cave, you're going to make beautiful engravings around it, like the Kharkov of the Mizbeach, right, that went around the outside that we learned about in Zvachim. So you're planning on making engravings in it that tended to be for beauty. Latiach betunas, or you're planning on also a sanding of the surface with tunas, which is fish skin, Rashi says. Right? It's a rough skin. So you're going to use that to sand the surface. It's still called a golem. Sorry?
Tuna.
Tuna? Maybe. This is a fine sanding, Tosus notes, because the Mishnah in Kalim says that leather receives tumah only once you sand it, indicating that it's not really ready for use at all until then. So he says there's a rough sanding and there's a fine sanding. Here we're talking already a finer sanding. The mechuser kan, if it's missing a base with which it's supposed to function. O ogen, it's missing the lip. O ozen, or the ear, meaning the handle. In all those cases, it is tameh. The golme kli'etz are golmim, but they're able to receive tumah already, as opposed to the leather case where it could not receive tumah yet. Mechuser chatita, tahor. If it's missing hollowing out, it's supposed to be hollowed out, and it's not hollowed out, then tahor, then it's not anything. It's not, Right, it's not a kli. Mechuser chatita pshita. So the Gemara says, well, that's obvious. If it's missing hollowing out, of course it's tahor. Lo, tzricha dechak kapiza bekava. The answer is no, because sometimes you will have a hollow space in it, but it's not hollowed out enough yet. You want it to hold a kav, and it only is able to hold three log. So you still have to hollow it further. I might have thought it's already able to receive tumah because it's partially functional, but it's not what I need it yet to be yet. So even that initial hollowing stage is considered incomplete. That's the rule for wood. Yes. Correct. The Eluain Gome Klematchus. There's a nice discussion in Kalim regarding the issue of where intent trumps and where deeds trump and speech trumps and all that. But yeah. The Eluain Gome Klematchus. And here is the definition of golem as far as a metal kli. Kol sha'asid lashuf. If you are going to, again, smooth the surface. Lishabates. You're going to make those mishpatos. Ligarer. You're going to plane it. Rashi notes that lashuf is for iron kalim and legarer is for silver and gold kalim. Different verbs were used depending on the type of kli you were preparing. Lecharker, which is to make nice decorations in the surface. Lakish bekurnus, to bang out, or lecharkev is another addition in the margin. Lakish bekurnus, to bang out the dents with a hammer. Mechuser kan, it's missing a base. O ogen, or a lip. O ozen, an ear, meaning a handle. Tahor, in all those cases, it's called a golem, and therefore, since it's a metal kli, it's tahor. Mechuser kisui, but if it's missing a cover and you need it, you need a cover for it to function, it's called a golem. It's not. It's still fine. Right, tameh. It is already able to receive tumah because we viewed the kisui as a separate kli, Rashi says. That's why. Okay. So that's our definition of golem. And again, golem for wood. I'm sorry, golem, yes, golem for wood can receive tumah. Golem for metal does not receive tumah. So, I'm sorry?
Can't be a block of wood.
That's why we stressed here. Golem is pretty functional, it's just not finished.
It's a work in process.
Right. So the Gemara wants to know, Maishnahani or Maishnahani, why are the rules different for wood and metal? So it's a very interesting approach. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Ha'alu L'Chavod Asuyin. Rabbi Yochanan says because you use these kalim on fine occasions. Metal is for dignified use. And therefore it's not done until it looks nice. So therefore the metal is still tahor when it's a golem. Rav Nachman Amar Ha'alu D'Me'en Yikarim. Rav Nachman said the reason is because metal is expensive. And therefore, it's not done until it can be sold for an expensive price. If you try to sell me something that's incomplete and you're going to charge me like it's complete, I'm not going to buy it. So therefore, the golem that's metal is not able to receive tumah. So the Gemara asks, what's the difference between Rav Yochanan and Rav Nachman? Is there a practical difference between their two explanations? One that it's for important use and the other is for expensive use, or expensive for a high price. Ika beinayu, the difference is kli etzem, bone kalim. They're bone kalim were assumed to be expensive, but not for dignified use. They never saw the bone china that people developed, even though they saw china. We talk about that money, the kunya, in the Gemara, but that's glass, I think, generally. Yeah, but in any case, bone kalim were considered expensive, but were not considered to be for fancy use. Va'azdir Rav Nachman l'tameh damer Rav Nachman klei etzem k'klei matchus damu. And Rav Nachman follows his position in general that bone kalim are treated like metal, because he says that metal is expensive and so is bone. Therefore, they have the same rules as far as when the golem will receive tumah and will not. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Michladikli etzem mekabli tumah. You're assuming that bone kalim can even receive tumah. Tosfos adds on a biblical level. You're assuming that that's true. Is that really so? Yes. Tisanya, it's the following brayso. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan Mebroka Omer. Ma tamad lomar v'chol ma'asei izim tischatahu. Why does the pasuk say all ma'asei izim? This is in our parsha. That all of the ones that are made of goats, tischato, you shall be metahir using the paraduma, but you're supposed to be metahir the kli. The lahavi davar abamin ha'izim, we mean to include that which comes from the body of the goat itself, mina karnayim and mina tlafayim, from the horns and from the hooves or tlafim. That's what we're talking about. Rashi says, how do I know it doesn't mean the hide? Maybe it's leather, and the answer is because that was mentioned explicitly in the pasuk. It said b'chol kli or, so we know that we don't mean the leather. What we mean is that which comes from the horns and the hooves, which is kli etzem. Sha'ar behema v'chaya minayin. Well, how do you know that for other bones? Maybe it's only goat bones. The tamad lomar v'chol maaseh. No, the word v'chol expands. Well, imkim tamad lomar izim. Then why did you mention goats at all? Pra'la ofos, because we wanted to exclude kalim made from the bones of birds that would not be subject to the laws of Tumah. If you just said kli etzem, I would have assumed you include birds. So it means goats and things that are like goats. Birds are not like goats. They don't fly nearly as well. The birds. That's the idea. Yes. And now we suddenly threw in logic. That's why I said it was an interesting thing.
Beyond that,
the cherub is designated specifically in a pasuk in the Torah.
Right. So why have to bring that as a source? Because there's an example of metal.
Because it wouldn't prove anything about other pshutim or about the golem, right? It's really an entity unto itself.
Does it Erev is a finished
it's not intended process. To hold
anything. Right, but it wouldn't prove anything about others.
It's not intended to have a big feedback.
No, but not just that. It doesn't prove anything about Golem. It doesn't prove anything about other Pshutei Kli Klimatchus. Yeah.
But importance and expense are relative terms. Is it something expensive?
Yes.
Someone rich is not expensive.
Yeah, it's a very funny thing. I mean, what happens if sociologically things change?
Right.
This is a very, it's a very funny thing.
Let's say the value of gold and silver dropped tremendously.
Or let's say bone becomes something that we use for, it sounds like, on the surface of it, it sounds like the status of bone china would actually be different.
But bone china does not have to go to
America. Well, I'm not dealing with that type of, with that, that that's Tfilas Kelim. Tfilas Kelim is not about Tumah.
We're talking about Tfilas Kelim.
No, we're not. We're talking about Tumah. No, we're using it as far as Tahara from Tumah. That even though it says Tishatahu there, I understand what you're saying, yeah. But we're not using it that way. Yeah.
Doesn't it depend on the way it's used in the community where it's used? Like what happens if bone is used?
Wait, so that was a question you just asked. It sounds like it's really going to be dependent, which is a very funny idea. It's not something we usually associate with Tumah and Tahara. But there is room to do that, because we do have this concept of what your intent is. It is shayach, it is possible to make that argument.
It's clear.
Yeah. If you use a clear code, Shaloka Darko, does that mean, is it Mekabel Tumah or not?
If you use it, shaloka, right. So the question is, does it depend on your das? Does it depend on what other people do? Hey, it's not a simple matter. The other thing that I find very interesting here is that they didn't challenge with a kal v'chomer here. In other words, they didn't say, well, once you say this one can receive this way and this one doesn't receive that way, then the other one, you know, v'chud, because the whole thing was out of logic. It wasn't that I brought a pasuk and now I wanted to use that as a springboard. Okay, let's go right through here. Not because it's not an interesting discussion, but because there are more interesting discussions to see. We got to talk about nuts. The Mishnah. Achayev b'shkedim hamarim pater b'mesukim, achayev b'mesukim pater b'marim. Another of these splits. Almonds come in two varieties, apparently. You have bitter almonds, and you have sweet almonds. So they differ in their stages in which you have to separate truma and meiser. The almonds that are bitter will require it at one stage, and not at others. The sweet ones will require it at a different stage, and not at the ones where the almonds require truma and meiser. So the Gemara explains. Tana Rabbanan, here's a brisa. Shkedim hamarim kitanim chayavin gedolim peturim. The Tanakhama is easy. The Tanakhama says that bitter almonds only have to have truma and meiser separated when they are small. If you let them grow, they lose their requirement for truma and meiser, and the reason is because they're bitter. No one wants to eat them when they're big. When they're small, you can take it. When they're big, they're not edible. Whereas mitukim, the sweet ones, gedolim chayavin kitanim peturim, only the large ones are going to be chayav. The small ones not, because no one ever eats them when they're small. They're immature. You let them grow, and then you eat them at that point. That's the Tanakhama, and he is relatively straightforward. Here's the problem. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi Omer Mishum Aviv. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi cites his father Rabbi Yossi to say, Zeva ze liftor, ve'amrila zeva ze liftor, I should say, ve'amrila zeva ze lachiyuv. He says, there are some who say that he said both are potter, and some who say he said both are chayiv. Rashi and Tosfos disagree about what both means. Okay, Rashi's version of it, I'm saving us a little bit of reading here, but you can do extra credit, read it. Rashi says that both are putter means that both are putter when they are small. Okay, and the idea is that no one eats them when they're small, they're immature. Whether they're bitter or sweet doesn't matter. And that both are chayav means when they're large. And the Gemara is going to ask, what use would you have for large bitter almonds? That the Gemara is going to ask. The sweet ones, obviously, you would eat. Tosfos says no. He says both are potter means that both bitter ones are potter. You don't eat them whether they're small or whether they're large. And both large ones are chayav, and saying both are chayav means both sweet ones are chayav. Small and large, correct. That's the way Tosfos takes it. I'm going to read the rest of the sugya with Rashi, not as an insult to Tosfos, but to make it intelligible for us. Amar Rabbi Ilah says, Hora Rabbi Chanina b'tzipori, Rabbi Chanina ruled in tzipori, kedivrei ha'omer zeva zeleptur. Following the view that says that you are in fact exempt from Truman Meiser for both, meaning for both small ones, following Rashi. But according to the view that you have to do truma and meiser for both when they are large, what use do you have for large bitter almonds? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, because you're able to sweeten them via fire, you can roast them. I checked this online. I googled the phrase roasted almonds and found more than 1.4 million hits for all sorts of recipes. So apparently this is a thing, roasting almonds. I only knew about chestnuts.
If you go to Turkey, they got like hundreds of guys with roasted nuts.
Right.
Or honey roasted.
Right, they had cinnamon roasted, they had honey roasted, they had all sorts of roasted. Yeah, right. Right. Okay. So that's the flow of this Gemara. Okay. Whereas Tosfos says they want to know about Gedolim in general. Tosfos will say the question wasn't about bitter Gedolim, it's about Gedolim in general, and their answer is we roast them. Yeah.
If you take a product from the ground and you add it to
Yes. 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 That's correct. Just as, for example, if I take flour and I bake bread and I never separated challah, I separate challah from the baked product.
Value add.
Yeah. It doesn't change because we do it by volume, not by value anyway. So it's not that for that part it won't matter so much. Okay. The next Mishnah is still this splitting thing. It's going to go right through the end of the parak. The Mishnah talks about temed. Temed is a... I'm sorry? No. Different phases of one item. That's correct. So temed is a liquid that tastes like grape juice or wine, but depending on its stage. But the way you produce it is you pour water over grape seeds, and it absorbs some of the sweetness of the grape seeds, and apparently some of the actual juice that may be sitting in there, such that it could actually ferment. So our point is that its status changes depending on whether it's pre or post fermentation. That's one case that we're going to see. So the Mishnah says, "Hatemed ad shelo hechmitz eino nikach bekesef meiser." You can't buy temed with meiser sheni money. Remember, meiser sheni money is to be used to buy food in Yerushalayim. So you can't buy water or salt. Those are two foods that are not eligible for purchase. They're not foods. So you can't use it to buy water. So therefore, temed, until it ferments, is not purchasable with meiser sheni money. It's just water. Uposel es hamikvah. And if it falls into a mikvah which is incomplete and completes the mikvah, then the mikvah is pasul. Because it's water and it's mayim she'uvin. It's drawn water. It's not the water you need. Misha hechmitz, but once it ferments, so nikach bekesef meiser, it's now wine, and you can buy it with meiser sheni money. They no post alas hamikvah, and it will not disqualify the mikvah if it falls in and completes the mikvah, because, after all, it's wine now. It's not water. Okay, that's the first half of our Mishnah. Second half of our Mishnah is another law.
There are...
It will count towards the 40 sa'ah, that's correct. As long as it depends on its minority, it doesn't change the color, all sorts of other discussions that I'm not ready to discuss here, but Rashi may be. Rashi has a lot of explanation on this. But the answer is yes, it will count. The next part of our Mishnah talks about estate law. And this is the deal. There are two ways you can have a partnership as far as our Mishnah is concerned. One way is two people have separate properties and they choose to merge their properties. The other way is that two people inherit a joint property and they never split it up. So depending on which one you have, that will change the rules for how we view you. Do we view you as two separate entities working together, or do we view you as a single entity? So if two brothers inherit an estate and they choose to split it up, they say, okay, this is your part, this is my part, and then they say, yeah, but you know what, let's work together. They're viewed as partners. Whereas if they never split the estate in the first place, they're just running it, then they're considered a single entity.
It's like a co-tenancy.
Right. So, or whatever term is correct term to use on it. Ha'achin ha'shutfin k'shachayavin b'kelbon p'turin m'maisir behema. So, the rule is, if you give a half shekel, you give just a half shekel to the Beis HaMikdash. However, if I say, you know what, Danny, I'm going to Yerushalayim anyway, I'm going to go give a full shekel. It'll count for me and it'll count for you. Right? The rule is, okay, fine, we're going to hit you with a fee. And the fee is called kelbon. there are different views as to why there's a kelbon fee. Is it because if you gave a half shekel, there would be a half shekel plus a little bit more? Now that I'm giving a whole one, I'm cheating the Beis Hamikdash of that little bit extra. That's its own discussion. There are a couple of different views. But the point is that if two people combine to give a whole shekel, they have to add this fee called kelbon. So in the event that Achen are shutfin, when they are chayav in kelbon, meaning they are partners, right, two people separate, then paturi meiser behema. Then if they own animals, they don't have to give meiser behema from those animals because only solo owners have to give meiser behema. If you own an animal in partnership with somebody else, you don't need to do meiser behema. So you get out of your meiser behema by having a partner. So if they are partners, on the one hand they owe kelbon if they do their shekel together. On the other hand, they don't do meiser behema. The flip side, kishachayavin b'maiser behema, if they are considered to be co-tenants, if they are living in the estate or using the estate together, it was never split, so that they are obligated in maiser behema because it's one owner, kishachayavin b'maiser behema, paturim in a kelbon, they're exempt from the kelbon fee because they are a single entity. They're not considered to be two people doing it with each other. It's considered to be a single shekel from two people with one head, so to speak.
They also call this one joint tenants.
Okay, joint tenants. You know, I remember this. My wife was studying for the bar. I remember that discussion. That I do remember. There were different titles for different things. That I remember. That's about it. But I wasn't the one who took the bar exam, so that's okay. Mani mas nisen. So the Gemara asks, who is the author of our Mishnah on this issue of Temed, that says that all I care about is fermentation? I have other Tanoim who say fermentation isn't what matters, it's volume that matters. And this is the idea. I pour water over the grape seeds. I know how much water I poured, with great precision apparently. And I can tell if after I poured it over it, the volume increased. If the volume increased, that means that there was some liquid that came out of the seeds that now entered into this temed. And in this machlokas reviewed in the Rabbanan, that's going to be the standard. Volume potentially is going to be the standard, not fermentation. So
volume in the sense of concentration?
No, volume in the sense of width by length by height. The how much space does it take up?
But that's because it will determine how much percent is grapes.
No, it'll determine that something was added to this. It's no longer just water. Don't complicate things. That's actually straightforward, relatively so, anyway. Mani mas nisin. So who is the author of our Mishnah who says that the standard is fermentation? Lo Rabbi Yehuda v'lo Rabbanan. It ain't Rabbi Yehuda and ain't the Rabbanan in the following machlokas. Tisanya, here's the brisa, or disnan is actually what it should say. It's a Mishnah. Hametamed, that's your verb for making temed, in case you want to try that at home. Hametamed v'nasan mayim b'mida umata k'dei midasa. A person made temed, and he put in a specific volume of water, and he found on the other end that it was the same as it was in the beginning. So the Tana Kama says, Potter, in that case, there's no Truman Meiser to separate from it, because it's just water. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you still have to separate it, because I view it as wine. So the Tana Kama is saying that it's all about volume, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying it isn't about anything. He didn't mention fermentation. He said, you poured water over it, the water is now Chayev and Truman Meiser. That's all. So Mani, I Rabbanan, if our Mishnah was the Rabbanan, then Avogad the Hechmitz. It wouldn't have to do with fermentation, it has to do with the volume. If the volume is the same as it was before, even if I can somehow smell alcohol on it, they'll still say it's exempt from Truman Meiser. That's their standard. The I Rabbi Yehuda, and if it's Rabbi Yehuda talk, I Rabbi Yehuda, if it's Rabbi Yehuda, then Avogad the Law Hechmitz. So he'll say that it's Chayv and Truman Meiser, even without fermentation. He doesn't care about volume, he doesn't care about fermentation, he doesn't care about anything. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua. So Rav Nachman gives me the first of two answers. There are going to be two answers. We're only going to get to one today. Rav Nachman answers, citing Rabba Baravua, B'shehech mitz machlokes, umathis and Rabbi Yehuda. That Mishnah that you quoted was talking about where it fermented. Then they had their debate about volume, but it's assuming fermentation. Umas nisin Rabbi Yehuda. So our Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda, who said, I don't care about volume. All I care about is fermentation. All I care about is fermentation. V'chein am Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, b'shach mitz machlokes. And so said Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina. The debate is indeed where it fermented. And we'll pick up with that in the middle of the first answer, God willing, tomorrow.